Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. We have a packed and important agenda for you today. At the back end of the show, we're going to be listening to two excerpts from Bob Avakian's most recent work, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution. Now, this work is also available to download and share broadly by going to revcom.us and clicking on the BA tab at the top of the page. And before all this, I am pleased to welcome back to the show Carl Dix. Carl is a founding member of the Revolutionary Communist Party. He is also a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and spent time in Leavenworth Military Penitentiary for refusing to go to Vietnam during that war. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on again, Michael.
Sure. Let's jump into this, man. There's a lot to talk about. The things are going so rapidly and intensely in the world today that we really need to jump on this stuff and figure some stuff out. In a recent communique titled Communique 5, the RevComs warned that mass incarceration and the coronavirus is the death penalty waiting to happen. We brought you onto the show because of what I know of your past, your experiences, as you've noted in your introduction. But it's also, you know, there's a lot facing people right now today, especially people who are generally seen as the targets of the police, by the police, who are generally and really the targets of the police. There's a lot going on here in terms of who's hitting out at this and why and what's happening to people. And a whole section of people have been, as it says, you know, they're faced day to day, they're faced with the death penalty waiting to happen. Let's talk about this some.
Yeah, see, this is important to get at. And I want to step back just for a minute to say that in an earlier communique, the RevComs talked about how the virus is impacting everybody, but it is also filtering through the savage inequalities of this capitalist imperialist system. And that means those who are most marginalized are the ones who are bearing the brunt of the impact of the coronavirus. And a concentration of that is occurring in the prisons and in the detention camps for immigrants across the country. And this is important to look at because you've got 2.3 million people locked down in U.S. prisons and jails, thousands more, mainly Latinos, locked down in the immigrant detention centers and detention camps. I call them concentration camps. And they're held there in the midst of this global pandemic. And when you look at this pandemic, this is coronavirus, and what they say about how it is you're supposed to deal with it, they say you have to practice social distancing, maintain 6 feet of distance between you and anybody else in order to work to prevent the spread of the virus. You need to practice frequent hand washing with soap and water. And you need to have access to good medical care in case you get sick. Well, all of these things are things that are not possible if you're in prison or in an immigrant detention camp. This is just the reality for several million people all across the country, and the overwhelming majority of those several million people are black and brown people. 6 feet between you. Tell the guards at a prison, I need to maintain 6 feet of distance between me and other prisoners and between you and me. Tell the guards that and see how quickly that gets you into the hole. Talk about maintaining frequent hand washing with soap and water in prisons where access to clean water is not an assured thing. It's a sometimes thing. And soap is also a sometimes thing. In fact, I believe it was a year or so ago, the government sent an attorney into court to argue that keeping people in safe and sanitary conditions in the immigrant detention camps did not require them to give people access to soap and water. I mean, now first think about that. Sanitary and safe conditions, but no clean water, no soap. And then think about that in relation to the coronavirus rampaging through sections of society and killing people. And you get why some of these prisons are some of the hottest spots. You know, they do this thing about hot spots for the coronavirus, and they talk about percentages of infections that are happening at them. And the percentages of infections are higher in these prisons than in New York City, which is usually talked about as the hottest spot in the country, or the country's hot spot. So this is what we're dealing with. We've got people who are in these conditions where the virus is spreading, and this is real. I mean, the numbers tell you what it's like. Rikers Island, 8%+ of the prison has tested positive for the coronavirus. That's the inmates in the prison. Cook County's infection rate is lower. It's only 7%. Statesville Prison in Illinois has an 11% infection rate. And once you get to that level, and these are places where they're not doing widespread testing, they are testing people who present symptoms, which means the actual infection rate could be much, much higher. And then let's look at another factor of this, and that is that large numbers of these people held in these prisons are in prison awaiting trial. They've been convicted of nothing. Rikers Island, 85% of the people held there have not yet had a trial. They're awaiting trial, supposedly presumed innocent, but actually facing potential death. Similar situation in Cook County Jail. Beyond that, you have people who are in jail for parole violation, people who are in on drug crimes, you know, possession of illicit drugs or some other petty charge. And then among the people in prison, you have a lot of people who fall into the vulnerable categories that they talk about in relation to coronavirus. People who are elderly, people who have underlying conditions. And these people are being held in what you could call a petri dish for the coronavirus. That's a scientific experiment term where you put a virus into what they call a petri dish. It's a container, and you watch it spread. You see it spreading. This is what's happening with people. And look, I also co-founded the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. And in working around this, back 8-9 years ago, I said that police terror and mass incarceration are the spearhead of a slow genocide targeting black and brown people. Well, what we're seeing happening today is that that slow genocide is being sped up and becoming a fast one right before our eyes. And it is not being acted on by the authorities.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me this, because as I'm listening to you, it's really striking me. A lot of times that we've talked about this in the past, you and I have talked about it on this show in the past, but also generally, you know, in society, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know, there's just like, things are always so clouded and purposely. I mean, you look at the newspapers, you look at the radio, you listen to the radio, you watch television. The scene is always something that's very different than, you know, in a certain sense, it's very different than what's really happening in society. And I was thinking about as you're talking, especially around that, a lot of the stuff that you were saying, the very fact that we're talking about 2.3 million people, and out of those 2.3 million people, we're talking about 60% of them are black or Latino. You think about what that means, you know, that's a very heavy thing. And these prisoners are literally being left to die at best or killed.
Yeah, exactly. And you see this, another angle to come at this is that over the past less than a month, like maybe 3 weeks, there have been 30 actions in prison ranging from hunger strikes to sit downs to actual rebellions where people are saying, we are dying in here. We are dying in here. Save us. And they are not making this up. There's a killer that is ravaging through the places where they're confined, and no action is being taken, or very little action is being taken to do anything about it. And there's a way in which this tells us about the overall situation, which I want to get to in a minute. But it literally tells you something, that when this comes up, things are posed like, well, we can't let these people out because it would make it unsafe for all of society, as if these are not human beings, people who are put in conditions where their lives are being threatened. One elected official, I forget his name, made a statement that there is no right to social distancing in jail. You forfeited that right when you got arrested.
So you forfeited, in other words, you forfeited your right to be a human.
Yes, that's what it comes down to. You lost your humanity when you got arrested, and you are now in our hands, and we can do whatever we want to you. And that's what's coming down. And people need to look at that and look at it straight in the face. And that's why this communique number 5 that you referenced is so important, you know, because this is happening right now as things go on. Breaks into the news every now and then, but it is not being focused on, it is not being taken up, and it is not being acted on. And people really need to think about this, and then think about, how is it that the German people allowed what went down there to go on, and compare this to it. And don't ask, why did the Germans let that go down? Ask, what are we going to do to see to it that this slow genocide being turned into a fast genocide does not happen, not on our watch? And that's an important question that this communique number 5 from the RevComs raises. And people need to go to the website, revcom.us. They can find all 5 communiques from the RevComs, the 5 that have come out so far, and they'll be able to follow future ones. They could also check out an interview that Roosevelt, a member of the Revolution Club from Chicago and a former prisoner himself, did for the RNL show, which I also encourage people to check out. It's a weekly YouTube show that the RevComs do. And it is must watching if you want to be on top of, not just on top of what's happening, but digging into and engaging what can and must be done to stop the horrors that are being perpetrated by the general operation of the capitalist imperialist system, and horrors that are being made worse by the Trump-Pence fascist regime.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking with Carl Dix, a revolutionary communist dedicated to bringing down this whole system and all the horrors it creates against the people and the planet. Let me ask you this, Carl, because as you're talking, I think it's important to, you know, really, I want to step back for a minute around some of the stuff that you said, you know, and the fact that actually, look, this point about these people who are in prison and being left to die, or sometimes, truthfully, outright murdered, you know, it's which is, you know, murdering prisoners is not apparently a very, never happens or only happens in a blue moon in the prisons. It's actually, you gotta fight to stay alive for a lot of people who are in prison, especially if you start saying things or doing things that they don't approve of in terms of asserting your humanity and the right to actually be a human being in this society and to stand up against all the hell that's coming down on people. So, I wanted to ask you this. You know, you have prisoners who are being left to die, you know, and that's what we started to talk about, or more truthfully, outright murdered, and that this isn't an accident, but a very deep part of the system itself. And I think that's not so much what people look at when they see this. You know, they can see, you know, just sort of the bucket-headed, you know, reactionary guards or whatever, but they don't really see, you know, it's more the guards play a certain role. But it's not the guards are like determining what happens overall, that it's actually this what's happening to people is that it's not an accident, but it's a very deep part of the system and the way it functions. Let's talk about that a little.
Yeah, this is very important. I went into this, again, going back a number of years, well, not only before the coronavirus, but even before the Trump-Pence regime, when I did a talk at Riverside Church entitled Mass Incarceration Plus Silence Equals Genocide, And I trace the historical development of the savage oppression that black people faced in this country from the time when the very first Africans were dragged to this country in slave chains. I'm going to give a very short rendition on this. Through the centuries of slavery, the decades of Jim Crow segregation and lynch mob terror, those were periods when black people were required, as an unpaid initially, slave labor workforce, and then slavery by another name, you know, plantation sharecropping, followed by the bottom tier of the industrial workforce in the plants around the country. What began to happen as those plants were moved around the world in search of sections of people who could be exploited even more savagely was you had still tens of millions of black people here in this country. And it was in that period that mass incarceration began to be built up. Nixon begins it, but it continues apace through the administrations of every U.S. president. Big leap under the Clinton administration. You know, the ominous omnibus crime bill, I call it the ominous crime bill, was a big leap in mass incarceration. So you had hundreds of thousands of black and brown people who were languishing in these prisons because the system had no future for them. And they were being targeted with special laws like the 100-to-1 disparity in the penalty for powder and crack cocaine, where poorer people who were dealing and using crack cocaine faced much stiffer penalties than better off people who were snorting powder cocaine, if they ever got caught around that. So you have this situation where people are languishing in prison, and they have been thrown on the scrap heap of society. Then you have something like this virus, this coronavirus, come along. And like I said, it filters through the savage inequalities and targets those who are most marginalized. So this is a section of people who have been tossed aside anyway, and no one is supposed to care about what happens to them, because as the guy who says no right to social distancing put it, these people are no longer human. They don't count. You're not to be concerned about them. This is what we're up against, and it concentrates how the normal workings of this capitalist system, together with the actual implementation of a fascist form of rule, has come together to heighten all of the horrors that was coming down around this system. You know, because you have a situation where already you're up against a crisis by the development of this pandemic, this coronavirus. You have a system that works on the basis of profit, not meeting the needs of the people, that stands in the way of actually confronting it and meeting it in ways that minimizes the damage that it's done, which is why, you know, ventilators, masks, gloves, other personal protective equipment that not only healthcare workers need, but society at large needs, is not available because there was no profit in producing all of that. And that stands in the way of turning on a dime to actually go and do that. And you have things like, well, they're telling the populace, don't wear masks, and initially don't wear masks and gloves, because we need that for the healthcare workers who are also not being provided it. This is some of what you're up against. Then you have a science denying regime that tells you don't worry about it, it'll go away like a miracle. And there are still Christian fundamentalists who, when asked about this, will say, along with, I support my president, Donald Trump, that I'm covered with the blood of Jesus Christ, so I am protected from this virus, which scientifically and in reality, it don't work like that. That ain't the way it goes down. So there is a way in which the system itself stands in the way of dealing with this. And the ability to deal with it is being made even worse by the fact that you've got a fascist in the White House wielding the reins of power. And that is happening and coming down in a concentrated way for people in the prisons. And that's why towards the end of the communique number five, two things are brought forward. One is, and it's basically the theme is this must end, meaning both the savage oppression that has come down historically on black people and the slow genocide that's being sped up, and ending it will take an actual revolution to emancipate all humanity, which is something that the Revolution Club is organizing for. And then at the same time, it talks about the need to come together to talk, figure out what we can do about preventing this mass death sentence that is targeting prisoners, and how do we build a fight around that. And that's already beginning to take shape, you know, with social distancing protests. People are doing car caravans. I actually participated in one long distance that happened in Chicago, where people circled Cook County Jail and then held a speak out press conference out front that I was asked to call into, and I made a statement, you know, by phone to it. People are doing car caravans and car blockades of detention camps. Refuse fascism in particular is delivering body bags to Trump properties, and they have that scheduled for Saturday, April 18th. I hope this goes on before then so that people can hear about it in advance. But anyway, this is what we're facing, and we have to figure out how we fight this, how we build a fight around it right now. But we need, and not but, and we need to connect that fight with engaging how do we end horrors like this once and for all. And the way to do that is an actual revolution, one that overthrows this system.
Mm-hmm. Carl,
let me just close up on this.
Yeah, sure.
Dismantles its institutions of violent repression. We've got the leadership for this revolution in Bob Avakian, the leader of the Revolutionary Communist Party, the strategy for carrying it out, and a blueprint for the future society that could be brought into being with the Constitution for a new socialist republic in North America.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I was going to interrupt you with was, I think it's actually really important what you're saying. And as I'm listening to it, I keep thinking about this, you know, the fact that, and some film I saw the other night that raises this, that really sort of concentrated some of it, is that when you read what prisoners have been able to write about in terms of what they're facing in all this, and you read about what people are thinking, there's a distinct resemblance, a really distinct resemblance to what the Nazis did to all those that they judged to be unfit to live. And to me, it sort of says something in relation to what people need to recognize is really going on and act upon that. They need to act upon it in terms of, are you going to stand there and allow an entire section of people to be called that, you know, they're unfit to live. They should be judged unfit to live. And what that means, and that's some of the where I thought some of the stuff in Chicago was really, really important in terms of it being the largest single spot of COVID-19 infections in the U.S., but it hasn't made people hit the floors. It seems to be the beginning of something that's really important, where people in the prisons, but also people outside and around who refuse to allow this to continue to happen are starting to move. And I think that's extremely important. And I know that from what I've read, there's been an important resistance in the prisons, to fascistic things being done to the prisoners. But I think people have to realize that more needs to be done than what's being done in the prisons. It needs to happen widely through society.
Yeah, exactly. And see, that's the point I was trying to get to when I raised this thing of, don't ask how did people in Germany allow the horrors the Nazis perpetrated go down. Don't just leave it there, but think about the horrors that are being perpetrated right now, and what are we doing and what are we going to do to stop it? Because it is exactly what you're saying. This section of society has had its humanity stripped from us. That was something that was happening before Donald Trump took office, and it is in being intensified right now. And this global pandemic has thrown that in very sharp relief. It's not no longer just a slow thing of holding people in unsafe conditions, lack of access to medical care, subjected to forms of torture like solitary confinement, clamped down on by brutal guards, divisions among the prisoners being exacerbated by the authorities in prison and used to keep help keep the prisoners under control. That was already going on. Now you have this virus that is killing people, and they're being held in conditions that make it impossible to work to minimize the impact. This is what is happening. It is happening on our watch. We are the people who have to, in the final analysis, either act to stop it or be judged by history to have turned our heads aside while a massive crime against humanity was being perpetrated, and one that you can't say you don't know about. You can't say, oh, I didn't know that was happening, because too much of it is out there, in part because of the resistance people in the prison have waged, but also in a beginning way, the resistance that has been waged outside of it. And we do need to note that, like in, I believe it was Arizona, I think a couple hundred cars drove and surrounded an area where there was a detention camp. That's important to take notice of. I think the Northwest detention camp in the northwestern part of the country, I forget whether it was Washington or Oregon, prisoners took over the yard and spelled out SOS with their bodies. Yeah. I mean, and it is saying something when a mass of prisoners decide they're going to act inside, be that a hunger strike or be that a actual manifestation of resistance like taking over a yard, spelling out SOS with your bodies, or something like, I think it was Statesville Prison in Illinois, where somebody snuck in a cell phone and a guy used it to video a statement that they are killing us in here. And the desperation had reached a point where he did not conceal his identity. And he said, look, I know I'm going to get it for this, but the way things are going, we're all going to get it in here. We're going to be allowed to die in here if nothing is done. So he was willing to put himself out on front as the person who did this to sharply pose a challenge to people outside to act around this. And this is a challenge that we have to take up. And if we refuse to do so, if we continue sleepwalking while this nightmare is being intensified and perpetrated, then again, it does come down to don't ask why the Germans didn't act. Think about and ask why you're not acting now.
Mm-hmm. Carl, is there any way people can get in touch with you or find out what you're doing?
People can get in touch with me. They can email me at carldix@hotmail.com. They can hit me up on Twitter at @carl_dix. And also, people need to go to the website revcom.us, because they need to get the writings of Bob Avakian, because he's doing a lot of topical writing right now, speaking to the situation that we face and some of the questions that we have to approach, engage, and break through on to do what's needed. And he brings together two important things here. One is the fact that the operation of the capitalist imperialist system is a horror for humanity, and we've got two choices. Either condemn humanity to continue to suffer these outrages in the future, if we have a future at all, or to make revolution to end it, together with the need to mobilize to drive out the fascist Trump-Pence regime before it's able to fully consolidate fascist rule in this country. And he does a lot of work on that, everything from an open letter to the black people who supported Joe Biden, a challenge to people who want to go back to the normalcy of the pre-Trump period, as well as what lesson do you need to take from the 1960s and the need to engage in a society-wide discussion and debate over reform versus revolution. So there's that. There's the communiques from the RevComs, coverage of the fight against fascism in this country. All of that's on the website, revcom.us, and I really encourage people to go there and check that out. And at the same time, hit me up, because I'm trying to reach out to people. I'm trying to strategize with people over how can we build a fight around this looming crime against humanity that's being perpetrated in the prisons right now. How can we sound the alarm on it, but also how can we build resistance right now in a way that makes it more manifest throughout society that there are people fighting this? And we can't do some of the things we did before, because, you know, before we would have mass marches in the street, mass sit down, civil disobedience actions. You can't do that in the midst of a global pandemic, but that doesn't mean there's nothing we can do. And I've cited some of the things that people are doing. We need to do more of that. And we also need to figure out how we can escalate that, take it higher and intensify it in order to build the kind of fight that can stop this horrific crime against humanity that's being perpetrated on people in the prisons, but it's also being perpetrated on humanity, on all of us. You know, and we can't view it like, well, that's someone else's problem. Because if we stand by and allow these people to lose their lives in massive numbers, then we have allowed our humanity to die at the same time.
All right, Carl, very much taken right to the heart, man. And I think it's really important that people do find a way to get in touch with you, talk with you about what's going on, hook up with all that. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. In fact, keep me in the little wheel going around, because I got to know what's going on and constantly get this out. All right?
Okay.
All right, Carl.
Bye.
Good talking with you, man.
Same here. All right, bye.
Bye. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've been talking with Carl Dix, a revolutionary communist who is dedicated to bringing down this system and all the horrors it creates against the people and the planet. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with some excerpts from a new work by Bob Avakian, so stay tuned.
If I'm listening, I wanna hear your thoughts, see it all. I can hear waves through the walls. You wanna go out tonight, you want to know what it's like when the wind's in your lungs and the fire is in those eyes.
Welcome back. That was Outer National with Here is the Rose. Now we're going to be listening to some segments from Bob Avakian's most recent work, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution. And again, this work is also available to download and share broadly by going to revcom.us and clicking on the BA tab at the top of the page.
The oppression of black people and other people of color. This system in this country was founded in genocide and slavery. From the beginning, African Americans and Native Americans were treated as pariahs, a caste of people less than human and not deserving of the same rights and opportunities as the European settlers of the territory. White supremacy was poured into the foundation and into every institution of the country. The uniting of the United States was accomplished through the compromise written into the founding Constitution that institutionalized slavery. And for generations, slave labor produced a great part of the wealth of this country. As I said in Basics 1-1, there would be no United States as we now know it today without slavery. That is a simple and basic truth. And then, when it was no longer possible to contain the conflicts that had been somewhat held in check by the founding compromise, the Civil War erupted between the southern slave states and the northern states, which increasingly were based on the exploitation of wage labor by capitalists. But shortly after the end of this Civil War, another compromise was engineered, which was a continuation of the original compromise under the new conditions. The country was put back together on the basis of reaffirming and reinforcing white supremacy. With the masses of black people still overwhelmingly in the South, subjugated and terrorized into second-class citizen status, exploited in conditions of near slavery and sometimes still literal slavery by white plantation and other property owners. And the land and way of life of the native peoples was further stolen through armed conquest and decimated by slaughter, confinement in reservations, and cultural genocide, which has resulted in the poverty, oppression, and repression that continues to be inflicted on Native Americans to this day. Under slavery, it was the armed patrols and militias organized by the slave owners that hunted down slaves who rebelled or just tried to escape and terrorized the masses of black people as a whole. After slavery, with Jim Crow segregation, it was the Ku Klux Klan, together with local sheriffs, who largely played this role. Today, in the conditions in which masses of black people in the ghettos of the inner cities find themselves, the role that was played in the past by the slave patrols and then the Ku Klux Klan and local sheriffs is now carried out by heavily armed urban police forces. This is a big part of the overall role of the police, which, as I said in Basics 124, is not to serve and protect the people. It is to serve and protect the system that rules over the people, to enforce the relations of exploitation and oppression, the conditions of poverty, misery, and degradation into which the system has cast people and is determined to keep people in. The law and order the police are about, with all their brutality and murder, is the law and order that enforces all this oppression and madness. In the days of slavery and then Jim Crow segregation after the Civil War, the oppressors viciously exploited and terrorized black people, brutally murdering those they saw as posing a threat or not staying in their place. But they did not kill off or incarcerate a huge part of the black population because their labor was needed as a backbone and crucial source of profit for the cotton plantations and the overall economy in the South and the country as a whole. Today, with great numbers of black people concentrated in the inner cities, and with many factories and other capitalist enterprises having moved away from the urban cores, the police have killed thousands of black people in the last few decades, and they play a key part in forcibly maintaining masses of black people in a situation where, especially youth robbed of any decent future under this system, are killing each other in the thousands, and millions are either incarcerated or in some other way under the control of the so-called justice system. Because white supremacy is such a defining part of this country, It is not just African Americans and Native Americans, but people of color generally who are subjected to discrimination, degradation, and brutality. And this applies now in acute ways to those whose roots lie in Mexico, El Salvador, and other parts of Central America and the Caribbean, which are tightly ensnared in a net of domination and exploitation by the imperialists of the USA, whose ravaging of these countries has driven many to emigrate to the US itself. White supremacy and capitalism, they have been completely interwoven and tightly stitched together through the whole development of this country down to today. To attempt to really put an end to white supremacy while maintaining the system of capitalism would tear the entire fabric of the country apart. White supremacy and capitalism. It is not possible to overcome and finally abolish the one without overthrowing and finally abolishing the other.
There seems to be a coming civil war, but between the Democrats and the fascists, open warfare between the two will present a false but compelling argument of, quote, which side are you on? Not fighting the fascists is like fighting with them. Raising a third alternative to these two sides may pose a different kind of challenge, such as a strategic alliance, perhaps.
Well, here's the problem with the Civil War. If you listen, some of these right-wing and fascist politicians have been talking about another civil war for some time now. Newt Gingrich, who's a close advisor of Trump, you know, a longtime right-wing, essentially fascist politician, you know, and other, some of these other like overtly racist politicians and so on are talking about another civil war. But the way this is, if it shapes up as a civil war between Republicans and Democrats, is going to be a very one-sided civil war. And you know, with the fascists being the only ones who are actually want that civil war. Because here's the thing about what's going on within the ruling parties and the ruling class. As can be seen by Trump, or with Trump, and Pence, you know, doing his bit, they want to shatter and break all what have been the norms of how the society has operated in a kind of bourgeois, capitalist, democratic way, which, as I said, is actually the exercise of dictatorship, but in a way that also disguises that dictatorship. They want to shatter all those norms. I mean, you never had a candidate, at least in recent times, like Trump, who ran, you know, rallying his supporters to, you know, around the cry to jail his opponent. Even something like that was unprecedented. So their whole thing of these fascists, they want to shatter all those norms in order to be able to construct ones that are even more overtly, openly oppressive and repressive. And as I said in my talk, you know, basically doing away with the rule of law and making it the rule by fascist diktat openly, more or less. But what is the Democrats' answer to this, and why are the Democrats not calling people into the streets in opposition to this? You'd think, my God, the Democrats are, they talk every day about how this is destroying our democracy, quote unquote. Every day you can hear some Democratic Party spokesperson say this. But why don't they call the people into the streets? Because their way of dealing with this is saying that while the fascists are trampling on all the norms, in order to oppose them, what we have to do is uphold all the norms that they're destroying. And so therefore, we don't want things to come to a head. We don't want a civil war. We don't want things to fully break out into open warfare between two different sections of the society, including of the ruling class. We want to preserve things the way they've been. It's like somebody comes into your house and they start breaking everything that you've got of value, and you say, I'm going to oppose you with all those things I have of value. But they've just broken everything that you have of value. And it's like they came in and they shut off the electricity and you said, I'm going to defeat you by shining a light on you. See, this is a losing strategy of people who cannot really come to terms with what's happening. Because if this section of the ruling class, what I've called the mainstream section, acknowledges that they're dealing with a fascist force that's going to remake the country in a fascist way, then two things flow from that, or at least two. One, then you do have a responsibility to go all out to stop it, including calling people out on the streets and willing to go to civil war if it comes to that. And the other thing is, I forgot what the other thing is. Wait a minute, what did I just say? You have to call people into the street, go against it. Oh, you have to, I know what it is. You have to acknowledge that the system itself has produced a fascism through its ordinary legitimate channels. In other words, this fascism didn't come in because there was a military coup that took over, suspended elections, and so on. It came in the same way Hitler came in, by actually through the regular procedures and institutions and processes of the system. So if you acknowledge that this is fascist and not just, you notice how they use every word but fascist, conservative, populist, nationalist, white nationalist, everything but white supremacist and fascist. Because again, if you acknowledge that it's fascist, then there are implications to that. So, you know, they don't want to have a civil war. They don't want to go to the mats, as they say in the mafia or whatever. You know, they don't want to do that. They want to defeat this. They do want to defeat it, but in their own way, within the, you know, flowing from their whole role in the system, they want to defeat it by trying to uphold the norms that are being trampled on and destroyed. And that's why they keep thinking, well, this time Trump has gone too far. This time even the Republicans are going to have to be patriotic. I mean, he went to Russia and stood there with right beside Putin and said he believed Putin more than our intelligence agencies. Surely that's a bridge too far. Surely the patriotism of the Republicans that's been slumbering is going to be awakened, and they're going to do something. No. All it was required was Trump came out and said, well, I misspoke. You know, I meant to say wouldn't when I said would. Now, look, the guy's a dumb motherfucker, okay? But he knows the difference between would and wouldn't, okay? So that was all that was required, and the Republicans said, okay, good, he admitted he made a mistake, now let's get back to the fascism that we're all about here. And the Democrats are, Chuck Schumer said, okay, if they try to appoint, you all know Chuck Schumer, okay, I don't have my glasses, but anyway. If I had my dark glasses, I could put them down here like a Professor Schumer. Maybe I'm getting loose and too personal, maybe. But anyway, what's wrong with him is not the way he wears his glasses. That's a symptom, not the cause. Okay, so Chuck Schumer said about the appointment to the Supreme Court, if ever there was a time to fight, this is the time to fight. Well, where's the fight? What are you doing? Where are the masses of people you're calling out to fight? What is your fight? You gonna go have dinner with Trump like you did around the DACA and the immigrants? See, this is why you cannot rely on these people, because they don't want this to come to a head, and they're doing everything they can not to have it come to a head. Meanwhile, the other people are saying, fine, just keep doing what you're doing. We'll just keep rolling on and roll over you. And we're perfectly happy to have it come to a civil war. because we want to shatter all this stuff and bring in a different way of dictating here. And this is what we're dealing with here. This is why you know, if there's going to be a civil war between two sections of the people, even in political terms right now, not in military terms right now, it's going to have to be the masses of people on one side who really do care about not having a fascist regime in this country, even with all the differences there are among all those broad people who really do care about that. That's going to have to be the side that's going to have to come out and oppose what these fascists are doing. Not the Democratic Party. If, you know, yes, there may be particular lower level Democratic Party politicians who may join in this as it goes along, but not the Democratic Party leadership and not the Democratic Party as an institution, which again is a ruling class institution. This is what we have to not only be clear on ourselves, but go out and you want to talk about 2 minutes with people. I'll tell you one thing. Soon as people start talking about these institutions of this system, whether it's a political party like the Democrats or the media or whatever, we got to say them very simply, that's them, not us. Those are their things, not ours. Ours is in opposition to all that. Every time you hear people start talking about, you know, people get drawn in talking about, well, we ought to do this and we ought to do that. I said before, it reminds me of the joke back in the 60s when the Lone Ranger, you know about the Lone Ranger, and his companion Tonto, the Indian, were out somewhere and they were surrounded by gunmen firing at them. And then turned out the gunmen were Indians. And they were firing rifles as well as bows and arrows. And at a certain point, the Lone Ranger turned to Tonto and said, "Look like we're in a heap of trouble here, Tonto." Tonto said, "What do you mean we, white man?" And that is how we have to look at these institutions of the ruling class. That's you, that's not us. We're opposed to you, you're opposed to us. We're gonna overthrow you. We're gonna overthrow them. Not right now, but we're working toward that. And this is something, you know, very clearly and sharply needs to be brought out to people. That's them. Yes, there is an us and a them. There is a ruling class and the people who are ruled over. There are the exploiters and the exploited. There are the oppressors and the oppressed. Yes, there are. And this government, these media, all that stuff is them. And we're down here doing what we need to do to get to the point where we can defeat them and get rid of their whole thing. Anyway... the question about a third alternative. Look, again, this goes back to your point about there's all these contradictions, the question you raised earlier. Yeah, things are complicated. They're not simple. So we can understand the role of a Democratic Party, but we're also, it's going to be necessary in mobilizing massive people against this fascism to unite with people who still have a lot of allegiance to the Democratic Party. And are going to have one foot here and one foot there, and we got to struggle with them. We're not, the basis of unity is not if you vote, you can't be part of this. The basis of unity is you got to get into the streets to drive out this regime, and we can argue about why you shouldn't be voting for the Democrats. Again, there's a lot of everything, you know, all these struggles of any major proportion, let alone a revolution, involve all this kind of complexity, and you can't be narrow-minded and rigid and dogmatic in approaching it. You have to have an understanding of what's the objective and does something more contribute to that objective or more take things away from it. And then you act on that basis, and if it's more taking away from it, you see if you can struggle to change it so it becomes more of a contribution rather than something that's pulling the other way. But this is what we have to do. It's complex. People who are going to, you know, who, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm going to vote for the Democrat in the midterm elections. Well, okay, but let's get in the streets. Because, you know, there's no evidence that voting for Democrats is anything that can be relied upon to deal with this monumental problem that we're confronted with.
Once again, you've been listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I want to thank all of my guests today and each and every one of you. If you want to write to me about ideas or comments you have around the show, please do. Send your ideas and comments to mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with a little bit more from Outer National. And here is The Rose. Talk with you next week.
Coming, the starvation, the kids in coffins, the night is young, the hour's getting late. It's far alone, and we just can't wait. A moment in time, then it is gone. Now wait a second here, something is wrong. Your feet on the ground. Why don't you dance?